This is the second PM session for Sunday, July 26, 2020. In the first in-class at the building session, we got up to and through chapter 13 of the book of Isaiah. If you look at your daily Bible reading schedule for the year, you will see that through Sunday, July 26, we should complete reading through Isaiah chapter 25. So we have several more chapters to go to complete that objective. So let's take up where we left off, chapter 13, and briefly hit the highlights of that chapter and then move forward. In the 13th chapter, we saw introduced the destruction of the country of Babylon, the nation of Babylon. The significance of this is that Babylon at this time, that is at the time the prophecy is made, is not the powerful nation that's causing so much trouble, so much grief for the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah. That country, the one that is causing so much grief for Israel and Judah, is the northern kingdom of Assyria. They're going to come against the land, and we're going to see more of that as we proceed further into the book of Isaiah. They're going to come against the land and cause problems, actually taking the northern country, Israel, into captivity and making inroads against the southern kingdom of Judah. That's especially going to be problematic during the days of Hezekiah, king in Judah. Just remember that Isaiah prophesied during the days of four kings, Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. And so that's yet to come, the inroads against the southern kingdom. And so what's unique about this chapter is it predicts the fall of Babylon, that is the 13th chapter. That's the nation that's going to take the southern kingdom into captivity. When we get to the prophecies about that, in the book of Isaiah, we see Hezekiah was about to die. God extends his life by 15 years. And during that time, emissaries, ambassadors come from Babylon, well-wishers, hearing that he had been ill and that he's doing better. So they come to visit him in that context. And he shows them all the wealth of the kingdom. And Isaiah says, what have you shown them? He says, well, I've shown them everything. And he says, well, you know, this is the nation. And of course, there's no way Hezekiah could have known this. This is the nation that's ultimately going to defeat Judah. And that doesn't mean it's Hezekiah's fault. He did not anticipate that this is going to happen, but it does happen. Just remember, there's a time lag of about 116 years or so, 115, 116 years between the destruction of the northern kingdom of Israel by the Assyrians. It's about 722, 723 B.C., when the city of Samaria falls, and the conquering of the southern kingdom of Judah. That's going to start about 606 BC in three successive waves over the next 20 years. And finally, the city of Jerusalem is going to be captured and destroyed in 586. And the temple is going to be destroyed. So this is a unique chapter, chapter 13. It's talking about the destruction of Babylon, which is in the future. So when we get to prophecies against Babylon, we need to remember this is predictive, this is prophetic. Just as a reminder, prophets are jumping all over the place and the calendar. There are different times and there are different places. So sometimes Isaiah is prophesying about something yet to happen. Sometimes he's placed himself and in that distant future about something that has happened and looking back to where he is. And so prophets can be speaking to the people smack dab in front of them in the particular place where those people are standing. And sometimes they can be pictured as standing in the midst of the captive people in the land of Babylon and so forth, and looking even beyond that or back to where they are in the present tense. So that's an interesting thing. Just a reminder, we notice this in chapter 13, that the second chapter of Daniel, he is an exilic prophet, as was Ezekiel, speaks about the successive kingdoms that are going to follow. Assyria is not mentioned in that chapter. Assyria is not the ascendant nation. Babylon is. But they're going to be defeated, and they're the top part of the image. And then they're going to be followed by the Medes and the Persians, who conquer them, followed by the Greeks, who are going to conquer them. That is the Alexander the Great Empire, and then the Romans, who are going to conquer them. And it's during the days of those kings, Daniel 2:44, that the kingdom of heaven is going to be established. And so chapter 13 is unique because it's prophetic about a nation that's going to conquer the people of Judah, the southern kingdom, and they're not the dominant nation yet. So let's jump ahead to chapter 14, where we're ready to start at the end of our time period in the first PM class. So the judgment's going to be brought against the nation of Babylon. Israel's going to be preserved, and they're going to return to their land. Just as a notice here, we're going to see many nations are going to be brought into the scope of God's judgment. Assyria is ultimately going to be punished. Babylon's going to be punished. So is Moab. So is Edom. So is Egypt. So is Ethiopia. So is, you know, every nation that surrounds them. Philistia. All these nations are going to be subject to God's wrath. So what was brought out in this particular swath of Isaiah is judgment against all the nations, including judgment against Israel and Judah. Just a reminder, chapter 1, verse 1 says that God is revealing these things to the heaven and to the earth, and he speaks out to the earth, "Hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth." And so he's speaking broadly to all nations, and in the context of speaking to all nations, he's also including what's going to happen to Judah and Jerusalem. So he's a sovereign God over all. And because of that, we should not be surprised that he's going to be meting out judgment against other nations. So judgment's going to be brought against Babylon. But Israel's going to be preserved, and they're going to return to their land. So many of the nations that we are about to see judgment brought against in these following chapters say that they're going to be reduced, and only a remnant is going to remain. But none of them are going to be restored to their former glory like they were before the judgment is brought against them. Even Israel and Judah, when they come back together in their reunification, so to speak, in the period of the restoration after the Babylonian captivity, they're not going to be the greatest nation that they were during the time of David and Solomon. So all these other nations are reduced to remnants as well, but the particulars of the remnant of Israel and Judah is such that their continuing seed line through Davidic, the Davidic line, David, of course, being the beginning of that seed line, is going to end in the Christ, the Messiah, who's going to fulfill the Davidic prophecies. So more about that as we get further into the book of Isaiah. So remember, again, that we just noted that Isaiah spoke about Babylon before Babylon's going to be the dominant nation in the world. Isaiah lived before the time of the Babylonian captivity. So here he's speaking about a time following that captivity. So it anticipates their ascendancy, and it anticipates their fall, and what's going to happen to the nation after that period of time, during the period of restoration. So many of the prophets lived during the time of the captivity, and yet others lived during the time of the restoration. So I say many. Jeremiah borders before and into the captivity, Babylonian captivity. Ezekiel and Daniel are in the midst of it, writing prophets. Other prophets may have existed, but those are the two writing prophets. So Isaiah is a southern prophet before the captivity. So he's a southern pre-exilic prophet. Micah was a southern pre-exilic prophet. Later, we're going to see prophets that are prophets after the captivity, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, and so forth. And so where they are, north or south, and in some extreme, cases outside of both north or south, that is, Jonah went to the capital city of Assyria, Nineveh. But basically, north or south, Judah, the south, Israel in the north, and before, during, or after the captivity, pre-exilic or post-exilic. Pre-exilic, exilic, or post-exilic. So the point is, prophets lived during the time before, during, and after the captivity. So it's a useful thing to keep them in mind as to when they lived and prophesied, and where and who the object of their prophecy was. Latter part of the chapter, or the next portion of the chapter, talks about the destruction of Babylon. And it makes reference to Lucifer, a name that we often apply to the devil, Satan, the arch rival of Father, Son, and Spirit. But this passage is not specifically intended to describe the origin of the devil and the demise of the devil, but rather to describe the fall of Babylon. There's some parallels or some counterparts in which one parallels the other. Babylon is going to be depicted as having exalted itself above every other nation and triumphed over many of them. And it's from that high estate, which the word heaven in this context may allude to, that the nation of Babylon fell. So it's Satan, our devil-like, in that their falls parallel each other, but that does not mean that this is specifically referring to all the details as to how Satan came into being and how he is the subject of punishment. The latter part of the chapter speaks about the fall of Assyria. So notice all these nations are going to be judged. Assyria, Babylon, Moab, Edom, all of these. We saw that already in chapter 10. And then the Philistines are mentioned in chapter 14 as well as being punished. So let's just glance at some highlights in the chapter. God's going to demonstrate mercy on Jacob in that even though they are punished, they're still going to return to the land, and God's promises going all the way back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are still going to be fulfilled, that through Abraham's seed, all nations of the earth are going to be blessed, and God's promises to David and the continuation of the seed line through David, that's also going to be fulfilled. So then after the opening verses, judgment against Babylon and the leadership and the king are pronounced. Verse 4, this is a proverb against the king of Babylon. How the oppressor has seized the golden city, seized the Lord has broken the staff of the wicked. So notice Babylon's depicted as an oppressor. Their golden city, the city of Babylon, has been broken. It doesn't exist anymore. The scepter of the rulers, the ones who struck the people with a continual stroke, where are they? Well, they're not what they used to be. Again, this is talking about the destruction, the ultimate demise of the nation of Babylon and the city. Why was this the case? Verse 11 talks about because of their pomp, that is, the huge ceremony and stuff and the greatness that they attributed to themselves. They're cut down. They're weakened among the nations. And so God's going to bring them down. You have said you're going to ascend to heaven. You're going to exalt your throne above the stars of God. You're going to sit in a place in which you presume to be God-like, on par with God. But that's not going to happen. You who made the whole earth tremble, you're going to be punished. You're going to be thrust through with the sword. So those references are coming from verses 12 and following. Verse 14 to 15, when it talks about you're going to be brought down to Sheol. You made the earth tremble in verse 16, but you're going to be thrust through with a sword in verse 19. So you're going to be destroyed. Notice verse 22 and following. I'm going to rise up against them. I'm going to cut off from Babylon the name and the remnant and offspring and posterity. I'm going to make it a possession for the porcupine. That is, it's going to be a place where beasts will live, but that does not mean it's going to be a place that was a dominant world empire. And then the next two sections, 24 and following, and then after that, 28 and following, judgment is brought against the Assyrians. Verse 25, I'm going to break the Assyrians, all right? And I'm going to tread them under my feet. I'm going to break the yoke that they had imposed upon other people. What their purpose was to defeat other nations was used temporarily to bring other nations to judgment according to God's purpose. But God's purpose is such that their judgment is coming, and that cannot be stopped. That's verses 26 and 27. The Lord's purpose, nobody can annul that. And then the latter part of the chapter, verse 28 and following, it goes back to Ahaz in the year that he died. Judgment's pronounced against the Philistines, and they are going to be dissolved, verse 31. Chapter 15 and the following chapter, 16, is going to talk about judgment that's going to come to the people of Moab. The Moabites were frequent oppressors of the children of Israel. Not only does the book of Isaiah prophesy the judgment which is to come upon the children of Israel, but as previously seen, the examples of Assyria and Babylon and Philistia, prophecies are often made regarding the wicked nations around Israel. And there are others, Ethiopia and Egypt, are about to come up too. Such is the case with Moab. Moab, as well as Ammon, was the name of one of the children born to Lot. We see that in the book of Genesis, the 19th chapter. And later it became a country proceeding from the person Moab, the child Moab born to Lot and one of his daughters. And it had several dealings with the nation of Israel. On one occasion, it refused to let Israel pass through their land. References made to that in Judges 11. They joined Midian, on one occasion to curse the nation of Israel, Numbers 22. And they're excluded from fellowship with the nation, Deuteronomy chapter 23. Other times in which Moab befriended Israel, we see that Naomi and her husband and her two sons left Bethlehem, the house of bread, because there was no bread. A famine had occurred in the land, and they went to the land of Moab, and there they lived. The two sons married Moabite women, one of which was Ruth, the hero of the story. And so there's a positive Moab lesson that's there. And then at some point later, Moab also paid tribute to the nation of Israel, 2 Kings. And this is when the nation of Israel was a dominant world empire at the end of David's reign. And this particular passage in 2 Kings, referring to chapter 3 and verse 4, referring to what was going on during the reign of Solomon. And so there's a transition at the end of Kings, the first chapter and the beginning of the next chapter, and so forth, that talks about the transition between David and Solomon. Let's see. Actually, that happens at the beginning of 1 Kings. I want to make that clear. I'm turning to make sure I'm not misrepresenting anything. So it's at the end of Chronicles, which is also the end of what we see before, yes, 2 Samuel 24, yes. It's 1 Kings, that's the transition point. David is old and about to die, and not 2 Kings, so I misspoke there. Anyway, Moab is said to have paid tribute to Israel in 2 Kings chapter 3. And the next chapter, let's just look at the notes on chapter 16 briefly, and then we'll survey both the chapters together. Chapter 16 is a continuation of what we saw before. In chapter 15, the troubles, the woes, the burden, the oracle that's going to be brought against the nation of Moabs. Their wickedness is described in the chapter, verse 6, and we see a timetable for these things coming about in verse 14. So let's look at 15 and 16. The word burden in this context, used frequently in the prophets, is talking about something that weighs one down. It's a weight that's burdensome. It's heavy. It's a lot to bear. But it's not referring to physical weight as much as it's talking about judgment that's going to come upon God's enemies. So burden here means an oracle, a prophecy, and it's generally an oracle and a prophecy about destruction. The weight of their sins is going to weigh them down because they haven't been what God wants them to be. So why? Well, it's because of what we noted before in the introduction to chapter 15 and some of the prior experiences that Moab was at different times an oppressor of God's people. And so their high places are going to be destroyed. Their temple is going to be destroyed. The people are going to be cut off. God's going to punish them because they had not been faithful in how they treated their relative nation. Now, this is many generations past since the time of Lot and Ammon and Moab, but they were still brother nations, they were still sister nations, so to speak, and they had not treated Israel well. So in chapter 16, that is going to be brought out in more detail. And it says that part of this is because of their pride. Watch the language in verse 6. We've heard of the pride of Moab, first reference. He's very proud, second reference. Of his haughtiness, different word, but same concept, haughtiness, and its pride. That's the fourth time pride, proud, or pride is used. But his life shall not be so, therefore Moab shall wail for Moab. Everyone shall wail. And so notice multiple times in this verse alone, it talks about how haughty they were and how filled with themselves they were. They're going to be punished. Their fields are going to languish. Their vines are going to be destroyed. Their branches, aren't going to be what it used to be. Gladness is taken away. Joy is not there anymore. Moab's going to be punished. Notice in verse 12, it shall come to pass when it's seen that Moab is weary on the high place, that he will come to a sanctuary to pray, but he will not prevail. That is, the gods of Moab are not going to be able to defend him. Verse 13, certainty of the prophecy. This is the word which the Lord has spoken concerning Moab since that time. But now the Lord has spoken, saying, within 3 years, as the years of a hired man, the glory of Moab will be despised with all that great multitude, and the remnant will be very small and feeble. So all of these great nations great in their own right, great in their own sight, that had at different times oppressed other nations around them, as well as Israel and Judah. They're all reduced to a remnant. So they're not what they used to be. God's accomplishment in Judah and Israel will still take place, even though they too are reduced to a remnant. And in that context, the theological import of remnant is very significant, because God's messianic seed line, heading obviously to the Messiah, to the Christ, is going to continue, specifically through David, but going all the way back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Chapter 17, the burden against Damascus. Damascus is the capital city of Syria. And so when it speaks about Damascus being defeated, it's speaking in a way to indicate that the nation of Syria is defeated, not just the fall of the city, but the fall of the nation. So this chapter discusses the woes going to be brought against Syria as God's judging all the nations. And so again, notice the language, the burden against them, the oracle, the prophecy that's going to be coming against them. They're going to become a ruinous heap, as we see in the opening verses. So remember, God not only judges his people, he judges all people. And that's part of what we see in this huge section of Isaiah, judgment against multiple nations surrounding the nation of Israel. A prophet informed King Ahaz in chapter 6 that the league that Damascus and Syria had at one time formed against Israel, those two kings, Reza and Pekah, as I recall their names, they're not going to amount to anything. They're not going to be able to do anything against you. That league is going to fall, and it's not going to be 2 years too long down the road in which you're going to see the end of that. They're not going to stand. So I said, Reza, it's Rezin and Pekah. Rezin, king of Syria, Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel. They formed an alliance, and they were wanting Israel to be part of that, and no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to join up with you. And so, okay, then we're going to war against you. He says, that's not going to happen. Don't worry about it. And so, again, there's a remnant theology that's introduced in this context about them being defeated. The remnant of Syria is alluded to in this context. And so all of these things are happening because they haven't respected the Holy One of Israel, verse 7. Their altars, the work of their hands, all the things that they've placed confidence in, not going to do them any good. They're going to be desolate. Why? Because they've forgotten the God of their salvation. That's interesting. Remember, Jesus demonstrated a powerful lesson in Luke chapter 4 in the synagogue at Nazareth when he alluded to what Elisha did. Elisha saved a man who was a leper, and that leper was a commander in the army of the king of Syria, Naaman. And so God demonstrated grace to Syria. And on another occasion, we've already seen where an army of Syrians was led blind into the capital city, the Samaritans. And rather than defeating them, that is, executing them, said, feed them and send them home. And there was a break in the negative relations between Israel and Syria because of that gracious spirit that was demonstrated. So notice, God graced an individual, Naaman. God graced the nation in that he did not allow the generally wicked kingdom of Israel to take advantage of a divine intervention on God's part in delivering the Syrian army into the city of Samaria. Don't take advantage of them. So that's interesting. God showed grace to them. And so God expected them to come to a knowledge of who he was and live in a submissive way to them. But that did not happen. That did not happen. All right, so chapter 17 also pronounces judgment against another nation. Next few chapters are going to be brought against Ethiopia, chapter 18, against Egypt, chapter 19, against both of them in chapter 20. And so let's glance at the notes for 18, 19, and 20. They're short, and then we'll look at the chapters themselves. Chapter 18 talks about the woes of the nation of Ethiopia. There are unique illustrations presented in the chapter, one with reference to the harvest, verse 5 and following. And that analogy frequently appears not only in Isaiah, but throughout the rest of the biblical text. In chapter 19, there's a switch. We move from Ethiopia to Egypt. They're the subject of this chapter. And like the countries previously mentioned, Egypt is also going to be punished. So prior to the time of the Assyrian invasion, Israel and also Judah was influenced by two factors, two political factors, two geographic factors, and not just geographic and political, but also military. The Assyrians were the dominant nation to the north. They determine a lot of what's going to happen to both of those nations, Israel and Judah, and Egypt to the south and west. They too determined a lot of what's going to happen to those nations. At different times in the history of those respective nations, they attempted to form an alliance with them. So at one point, Judah sought to form an alliance with both of these nations. Hence, a reference to the fact that Egypt and Assyria and Israel were involved in a three-way alliance. Verse 22, this chapter talks about that. And like we have seen already, Judgment chapters, going back in the last few chapters that we're reviewing now, 13, 14, and following, Egypt's going to be judged. So chapter 20 takes up the same theme of judgment against other nations. We saw Ethiopia in 18 and Egypt in 19. Now both of them are going to be mentioned as they are judged by God through the use of the Assyrians who are going to defeat them. So chapter 20, brief chapter, informs us of the conquest of Egypt and Ethiopia by the Assyrians. Egypt received the severe chastening because she promised to serve as the deliverer of Israel and made promises that she couldn't keep. And so note the reference in Isaiah chapter 3 to Isaiah walking naked doesn't mean that he walked around without any clothes, but that he wore the clothes of a prisoner. And another said that he was at least partially clothed. The word naked doesn't convey the same thing that we think about in the context of our English language. So it was a living prophecy. That is, not just that he was alive and a prophet in speaking words, but it was a living, acting out prophecy. And we will see other examples of that as we go through the time of the prophets. All right, so we hit 18, 19, and 20 in brief review by looking at our notes. Let's look at the chapters themselves and pick a couple of highlights. So verse 1 of chapter 18 talks about the land beyond the rivers, the land of Ethiopia, sometimes referred to in the biblical text as the land of Cush, the Cushites. And it talks about they had ambassadors by the sea, indicating they're a seagoing nation. Swift messengers, a nation of tall, smooth-skinned people. They were terrible. They were a powerful nation, and they wreaked havoc on other nations, obviously. So God says, "I'm going to look at you, and I'm gonna judge you because you weren't faithful to me." And the harvest and the bud and the grape and the branches illustration says, ultimately, all the things that you have produced, using the agricultural illustration, is going to be cut back and it's going to be consumed. It's going to be consumed in the summer, it's going to be consumed in the winter, and these people who are great and handsome and tall and whatever and terrible people, they will be judged. All right, that's chapter 18. Chapter 19, the burden, again, the oracle or the prophecy, which is always about destruction in this setting, is brought against Egypt. And so it talks, and all of these nations are ascribed a relative greatness in their own setting in history, this particular time, this particular place, all the things that they accomplished. They're all big dogs. They're all, you know, at the top of the heap, so to speak. And they all oppressed other nations, and they all oppressed God's people as well as other nations. And they're all going to get their just desserts. They're going to get their just rewards. And so this is a judgment against Egypt. I'm going to judge them. The idols of Egypt are going to totter. That is, they're going to waver. They're going to shake in the presence of God. So the Egyptians are going to be destroyed. All the things that they're involved in, their council, their idols, their charmers, their mediums, the sorcerers, they're going to be delivered into the hand of a cruel master, which is the Assyrians. And a fierce king's going to rule over them. And so the greatness of your nation is ultimately going to be broken, and you will in turn be submissive to another nation as you have had other nations submit to you. A number of things that are specific to the geography of Egypt are brought out. just as we saw before in Ethiopia in chapter 18. We didn't look at all of that. The rivers, central to what made Egypt successful, the reeds, the rushes, the papyrus, mentioned again the river. All those things are repeatedly mentioned in verses 5 and following. Again, this is the source of their strength, but all those things are ultimately going to be destroyed. They're ultimately going to be broken. And so all these things that you used to have, the Pharaoh, the ancient kings, the wise men, where are they now? Watch this, verse 12. We saw this before. Let them know what the Lord of hosts has purposed against Egypt. And so if you go back into a chapter we just reviewed, the purpose of the nation of Babylon, verse 26 of chapter 14, was not the same as the purpose of the Lord of hosts, verse 27. So their purposes may have temporarily aligned with what God wanted in bringing judgment against other nations, but ultimately God's purpose was going to overrule them, and they would be punished by God. So God's purpose, something against Egypt. They're going to stagger, and they're ultimately going to fall into their own vomit. Verse 14, not a very pretty picture. Verse 16 says, in that day Egypt will be like women, and they'll be afraid and fear because of the waving of the hand of the Lord of hosts, which he waves over it. And the land of Judah will be a terror to Egypt. So the roles are reversed. We have seen this, and we'll see this later in the prophets, where it talks about children are going to rule over them. Why? Because something's not right in the way that the nation is constituted religiously, culturally, politically, militarily, and so forth. And also it says that women will be your leaders. And you might think, well, what's it got against women? Well, in the patriarchal society of the day, to say that women become leaders and that women take a leading role, a dominant role in society, is indicating that the men who had been doing so have stopped doing so. And there was a power vacuum, so to speak. It's not saying men didn't have power, but they weren't being the choice leaders that God had designed them to be. So to speak of women's women and children as being leaders and so forth is to say the cultural system has been turned upside down and inside out, which means it's unlike everything that God initially had intended. It's not a politically correct way of saying things today, but it was a very powerful way of depicting how far removed they were from God's will at that particular time. And so they're going to be destroyed. And then Egypt is going to be punished because of the things that they've done to God's people. Notice the number of things that are brought out in 18 through 25 of this chapter in which the Lord of hosts is going to bring judgment against them. And at some point, God's going to be known in the land of Egypt, and the Egyptians will know God in that day. And so over the course of history, God often acted in behalf of the nation of Israel, not just for their sake, but for the sake of the nations who would witness what was happening in Israel and hopefully draw the conclusion that the divine hand of God was involved in this. So that's part of the message. God often acts so that his will can be seen through his actions on the part of the nation of Israel, and so that he is speaking to defend his namesake. Big message in the book of Ezekiel when we get there. All right, chapter 20. We mentioned this is three chapters, and we're all talking about Ethiopia or Egypt. Now, both of them are discussed in this context. Again, notice the rule of Sargon, king of Assyria, that's going to come against them. Let's take up in the opening verses. In the year that Tartan, he's a commander in the chief, came to Ashdod, which is one of the Philistine cities. When Sargon, the king of Assyria, sent him, and he fought against Ashdod and took it at the same time, the Lord spoke by Isaiah, the son of Amos. He's identified in that way multiple times in the chapter. Go and remove the sackcloth from your body and take your sandals off your feet. And he did so, walking naked and barefoot. And so the removal of some portions of his garments did not mean that he removed all of them. And what's his point? God's got a message. Just as, so here is an acting out on Isaiah's part that's going to demonstrate an analogy. from God's part. He says, just as my servant has walked on naked barefoot 3 years for a sign and a wonder against Egypt and Ethiopia, so, that is, in like manner, so shall the king of Assyria lead away the Egyptians as prisoners and the Ethiopians as captive, young and old, naked and barefoot. So he walks around and indicating that he is destitute, naked in this limited sense. And that's a sign that this is exactly what's going to be happening, not to Isaiah, but he prefigures the judgment that's going to be brought against Egypt and Ethiopia by means of this extended illustration. All right, so that's a very short chapter, only six verses, so the big image there is significant about what Isaiah did in this period of time, anticipates the means by which they are going to be conquered, Egypt and Ethiopia. So we return to Babylon. Babylon was the subject in earlier chapters, 15 and 16, and 14, 15. And we're going to come back to that. 14, 15, 16 is Moab. And we see them addressed again, chapter 21. So notice again the burden, that's the oracle, the prophecy, against the wilderness of the sea, against the whirlwinds in the south pass through. So it's talking about all these majestic physical demonstrations of power and say how great all of these things had come from them, but yet they're going to be destroyed. A watchman's going to see in the tower, and he's going to see what he sees, and he's going to see, you know, a lion, and judgment is coming against them. And in the end, when the chariot comes with horsemen, the answer is given. Babylon has fallen, all the carved image of her gods. They've broken to the ground. So that's verse 9. And then, as you continue, judgment's going to be brought against the nation of Edom. We didn't look at the our notes here, so let me do that before we continue looking through the chapter. First 10 verses, destruction of Babylon by the armies of the Medes and the Persians, and the reference to Elam in verse 2 concerns Persia, better known by Elam during the time of Isaiah. Media is, of course, a reference to the Medes. And then the next two verses, 11 and 12, refer to the defeat of Duma, which is in Seir, which is referring to Edom, and the victory of Israel there. And then the last, 13 through 17, talks about the destruction of Arabia during the reign of Jehoram. Northern Arabs plundered Jerusalem, and they're later defeated by Uzziah, one of the four kings mentioned in Isaiah chapter 1, verse 1. And they're here seen to be destroyed by the Assyrians. So let me pick up where we are. First 10 verses, again, against Babylon, against Duma, Seir, Mount Seir, and watchmen, what of the night? Watchmen, what of the night? What do you see? What do you see? And the point is, you know, ask about these things. Is judgment coming? And we will see that judgment is coming. In verse 13, the judgment against those who came in the northern kingdom we just alluded to in Arabia is going to be brought about. And the time frame is given within a year, according to the year of a hired man. We saw the same thing I mentioned earlier with reference to the judgment against the nation that's going to come about within the span of 3 years. That's back in, of course I can't find it the immediate time that I'm looking for it, but we just saw it, yes, in the end of chapter 16 with reference to Moab, the very last verse, within 3 years. And so they were hired men, that is, they were being used for a particular purpose, and when that particular purpose was fulfilled, as you would hire somebody, then judgment's going to come. Only here, the hired man is going to last 1 year, and the destruction is going to come. So that's chapter 21. We continue into chapter 22. Our objective, again, is to get to chapter 25, so we're getting closer to that. First part of the chapter refers to the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. That's not about to happen. It's going to happen, you know, after the destruction of the northern kingdom, 116 years later, but it's still coming. They're following in their footsteps, just a little bit more slowly behind them, but it's going to happen. That city was built upon several hills, is here referred to as the Valley of Vision. Note in several places, Isaiah identifies visions which he had concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Opening verses, the first two chapters do that. Jerusalem is going to be attacked, and in the midst of the attack, they're going to be reveling in sin. So they're not doing what God wants, and it's because of that they're going to be punished. They would, once they realize the gravity of the situation, even destroy their homes in an effort to protect the walls of the city, verse 10. This account is probably a reference to the invasion of Sennacherib. that we see in 2 Kings 18 and 19. Again, remember the end of Kings and Chronicles is the end in large measure of the bulk of the historical part of the Old Testament. The prophecies that we see in Isaiah through Malachi fit back into the time of Samuel, Kings, and Chronicles. Last portion of the chapter refers to the replacement of unrighteous Shebna by Eliakim, a righteous man. He was to be the key to the house of David. And that verse in the chapter 22 references the significance of having the role of the keeper, the key keeper, giving access to the king. And Jesus is referred to in that way in the book of Revelation, the third chapter. It was the role of that person to screen those people who wanted to speak to the king. In order to have access to them, you've got to go through the keykeeper, the gatekeeper. In this role, he had the power to open and to close the kingdom, to open and to shut. And if he opened, nobody could shut it. If he shut it, nobody could open. And so again, that power is ascribed to the Christ in chapter 3 of Revelation. So notice this is a burden against the valley of vision, the city of Jerusalem. Why are they going to be judged? Well, ultimately because they're not faithful. And they're not faithful because of their involvement in idolatry in large measure. Notice it says in verse 8, God removes the protection, the covering of the city of Judah. So God had watched over them. God had protected them. Their houses are broken down in order to fortify the wall. Verse 10, you did all kinds of things to defend yourself, but you didn't rely upon your maker. That's a constant message that we see throughout the prophets. And so because of their iniquity, verse 14, judgment's going to come upon them. There's not going to be any atonement for them. So we see the switch in the leadership from Shibna to Eliakim addressed in verses 15 and following. And saying one's going to be cast aside. And the robe is going to be given in leadership to Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, in this chapter. And he's the one who's going to have the key to the house of David on his shoulder, verse 22 and following. He's going to open and nobody can shut. And again, that's the passage that's a prefigurative of the role of Christ. All right. Notice the judgment passage, the last verse, verse 25. In that day, says the Lord of hosts, the peg that is fastened in the secure place will be removed and be cut down and fall, and the burden that was on it will be cut off. It's an interesting illustration saying that, you've been hanging everything on this, but it's going to be removed, and there's nothing to hang on anymore. Your judgment is going to come against you. Chapter 23. Judgment against Tyre, a great nation that had played a key role in Israel's history, is addressed again. Judgment against all other nations. Last chapter in this context, they talk about judgment against nations. The land of Tyre speaks of the fall of that nation. She's going to be laid waste, verse 1. After a period of 70 years, she's going to revive and dedicate her merchandise to the Lord. So there's a repentance that is anticipated in this. So this sums up the last several chapters. Babylon is going to be destroyed, chapter 13 and 14, because of their arrogance. Moab is going to be destroyed, in chapter 16. Philistines are also mentioned in chapter 14. The Assyrians are mentioned as being judged in chapter 17. Ethiopia in chapter 18. I'm not going to read all the notes in the Everyday with God notes. Egypt, chapter 19. Edom, chapter 21. All of these are talking about the nations around Israel and Judah that are going to be punished. And lastly, the nation of Tyre. And so they are going to be judged. Notice key language. We saw this at least twice already. Why is this happening? The Lord of hosts has purposed it to bring to dishonor the pride of all glory, that is, the false human pride. So when it says to bring dishonor to them, it's not saying that's wrong to be honorable, but not the way they were seeking to be honorable. So notice in this message, it not only says that God's purpose their destruction, but God's shaken all the kingdoms, verse 11. He's given commandments for the destruction of multiple strongholds, not just Tyre. The land of the Chaldeans, judgment's going to be brought against them. The ships that come from Tarshish, judgment's going to be brought against them. All of these things are demonstrating that God is going to bring judgment against nations that oppressed his people. A change in verse 17 is addressed after 70 years. We notice that in the notes. Her gain, Tyre's, and her pay will be set apart for the Lord. It will not be treasured nor laid up, for her gain will be for those who dwell before the Lord, to eat sufficiently and for fine clothing. So there's a reverse of order. Chapter 24 talks about judgment that's coming upon every nation. Every nation. Not just the ones that we've mentioned, but on a worldwide scale. And so judgment's going to come upon the whole earth. As with the book of Romans, this book follows a pattern of speaking specifically about judgment and the sins of certain nations, and then of the judgment and the sins of all. Romans 1, sins of the Gentiles. 2, the sins of the Jews. And chapter 3, everybody sins, and they're all going to be punished. So here in Isaiah, we've noted the judgment from chapter 13 through chapter 23 of all these different nations, and we just enumerated them in the summary that we've looked at before in chapter 23. And now, judgment comes upon the whole earth. And so, the certainty of this thing is spelled out in verse 3, for the Lord has spoken his word. The earth mourns, the earth fades away. Verse 4, the haughty people of the earth language. So this is all because of pride not rooted in God. The earth is defiled because of its inhabitants, because they've transgressed the laws, changed the ordinance, broken the everlasting covenant. Therefore, the curse has devoured the earth, and those who dwell in it are desolate. So judgment comes upon them, not because they violated God's law of Moses, but because they violated basic principles of decency towards others, to other nations, to humanity in generally. Their joy is darkened, their mirth is gone, verse 11, they're not what they were supposed to be, and so God's going to be glorified when he punishes them. All right, the foundations and the magnitude of this is spelled out. The windows on high are open up like the flood of Noah. Foundations of the earth are shaken like the flood of Noah. Earth is shaken exceedingly. Earth's going to reel because of all the things that God's going to do. They're going to totter, and the transgression's going to be heavy because of that. In that day, God's going to punish the exalted ones, verse 21, the kings of the earth, and they're all going to be gathered together in a pit, thrown into prison, and punished. All right? So notice the last verse. Then the moon will be disgraced, and the sun ashamed. It's like this impacts the whole creation. All right? And that's a figurative expression. Hyperbole, gross exaggeration for the sake of emphasis here. And it says, for the Lord of hosts will reign on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem and before his elders gloriously. You reject God, God will reject you. Last chapter in our reading is chapter 25. Though all of the destruction previously mentioned in Isaiah 13 through 24 has yet to take place, that is from the standpoint of where Isaiah is standing in chapter 25, Isaiah now projects himself past the time when all these events have transpired. The judgment's taken place and all these nations are judged and they're restored even in small part to what they used to be. Remnant concept is brought out with reference to other nations, not just with reference to Israel. He's speaking about those things are already done. They've already occurred. From that perspective, long into the future, after all these burdens are fulfilled, he's giving praise to the Lord for what the Lord is doing at that time, which is what he said he would do. And that confidence is depicted in the chapter as a whole, ought to be the kind of confidence that we as Christians are going to have. So in that day, going into the future, God's going to be worthy of praise. He always is, but now he's going to be recognized as that because he's done wonderful things. And in this mountain, God's place, spiritual Israel, spiritual Jerusalem, there's going to be a great feast, and there's going to be a choice pieces, and there's going to be wine, and the mountains of the world are going to be submissive to God. And so all of these things, after God has rebuked his people and has spoken, they're going to wait for him. And he's going to save them because they've waited for him. And all these nations that he pronounces judgment against, it's all done, it's all past, and there's a reason to praise God. And as we take up next in chapter 26, we see that there's additional praise coming once all of this is accomplished. All right, we're going to end there with our brief review of these chapters where we left off, 14 through 25. And next week when we get together, we'll take up with our review of chapter 26.